This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Back of the Nest preview show, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Welcome one and all to the Back of the Nest preview podcast. I'm your host, Terence Ford, and my God, do we really have to play that lot now? Albert and Esquith are here to chew the fat on the HF, Odgson versus Pardew, and how we meet Brighton just at the wrong time. And we also speak to friend of the pod, Joe Walker, about the bombshells that Mandela Egbo drops on his new podcast, International Clearance.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. PitchDMM.com.
Yes, welcome everyone to the show. Sadly, it's banging form Brighton that we'll get into later. But before we do that, Sam Hesketh, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Albert Curley, as always, a pleasure whenever you ordain us with your presence.
I was here last week. Hesketh wasn't here last week. So why am I getting that sort of backhanded compliment?
Kind of in my brain, it was Hesketh who was here last week and not you. Because that's the norm.
No.
Right. Exciting times this week, so let's get into this.
Damn, I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer?
So we'll do beer check, and it is the most exciting beer check, guys. It's happened, hasn't it? Finally, after several years of banging on about beers, we've only gone and got a beer sponsor. This beer check is officially sponsored by the Tiny Rebel Brewery in the week of their 9th birthday, no less. And we got some packages, didn't we, gents? Albert, what did you get through the post?
I got a selection of like 8 beers, which was very exciting, and almost more exciting, some fancy glassware to drink them out of, little beer glass.
Okay. Well, exactly. That's what I'm just about to pour my Key Lime Lager into by Tiny Rebel Brewery.
It's the sort of beer glass that you get on holiday. You know, it's just a little one, a little piquillo beer, just a little one with a bowl of nuts sitting on a veranda somewhere. Lovely.
Yeah.
Do you remember going outside and going on holiday? Can't remember that anymore.
Don't need to. Now I've got the beer and the glass in my house.
Hesketh, so not usually a beer man, but you're going to get on the Club Tropicana here. What were you thinking?
Yeah, well, I was like Albert. I got 2 nice packages. And we're talking about Tiny Rebel, not Manscaped, with a selection of beers and some very nice glasses too. I am also on the Club Tropica, which I'm reading it as you normally do, which is a tropical IPA, apparently, with a golden hazy eye. A mango pineapple nose and a tropical taste. And I was told it tasted like a can of Ting. And it does taste like a beery version of Ting. So that's completely accurate.
I think coming from you, that's a big compliment. One of my favourite beers, that one. And what about you, Albert? What are you on?
Well, I've already drunk all of the Cali Pale, which is
a good sign.
Yes, yeah, I tucked those away, and now I'm at the moment I'm with Hesketh. I'm knee deep in Club Tropicar. Notice I'm not mispronouncing it like you, Terence.
It's because it used to be called Club Tropicana until a lawsuit, as we've talked about previously.
From Wham.
So they do a Club Tropicana now, but that's the non-alcoholic version, and the NA on the end is an NA in a separate line. So,
and I have to say, for all my derision at you for drinking beers with fancy flavors, I have to say this one's pretty good. It's just a shame it's not sunnier outside. That's the only that's the only issue there.
Yeah, I had a really sort of limey, fishy dinner earlier, and this key lime lager would have gone lovely with that. But so thank you very much to Tiny Rebel. Happy 9th birthday. Really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll get some more in the future, lads. So today we didn't get past 9 a.m. in the morning, and it was Simon Jordan versus Andros Townsend on Twitter straight off the bat. Simon Jordan responding, someone said, Andros would have liked me at Crystal Palace as I would have increased his non-playing sub bonus. To which Andros Townsend replied, Simon, you probably would have, which is why you run the club into near extinction. Hesketh, it's a bit of a... There is a portion of fans that still have a bit of a loving for Simon Jordan, seem to have forgotten where he took the club and, absence or length makes the heart sort of forget and stuff like that. But Andros, he's done him a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, I'm not one of the people that still has a fondness for Simon Jordan, I must say. So I thought Andros was not only spot on, but getting that barb in early doors, like you say, was a nice touch from him.
Well, it comes about, I guess, from the show the night before on TalkSport, when Andros Townsend was on there talking about various football stuff and obviously Crystal Palace. And one of the things, Albert, I was touching on was Palace without Zaha, where, the record just gets worse and worse, obviously. He said, we've not been able to adapt without him. We need to find a way. We brought in Eze and Batshuayi. We have players that can step up. We know we've got talented players to get results without Wilf. We just need to do it. starting on Monday would be a good way to go.
Credit to Andros for speaking so bluntly. I mean, it's not like anybody else doesn't know that that's the case. But why did Simon Jordan take issue with that, just out of interest?
I don't know. He just... I guess it's because they're all on the same show and they're all on TalkSport and they're talking this. It was an attempt at some banter or something. I don't know. It was kind of an indirect, really, Andros. And then Andros has noticed it. So I don't know. Why is Andros Townsend on TalkSport talking about very current club situations? It feels weird. I'm surprised he's been allowed to continue to do it, to be honest. But... there you go. I think he kind of let slip that Wilf might even be fit for Monday night, or he's at least in with a fighting chance. I mean, I doubt it, but, his language around it wasn't that he was fully ruling him out. But again, we'll get into that later. But yeah, there you go. Simon Jordan, Andros Townsend, the fights you never knew you needed first thing on a Wednesday morning. What else we have? We've had the Holmesdale Fanatics have gone and put a banner outside the training ground, which says Palace pandemic of apathy. Change this mentality, restore the pride, ambition and vision. And this has come with a statement on social media, which says losing games without a fight, flair players shackled in negative formations, a lack of leadership and pride on the pitch. This is not the Palace way. Our safety first approach is being exposed and our spineless defensive tactics show no ambition or vision. Unused spaces on the subs bench instead of adding youth players to the first team bubble highlights the lack of inspiration. Consolidating just above the relegation zone with no plan for progress is not sustainable and breeds a negative atmosphere. This and the continued disregard for cup competitions shows a lack of respect to all supporters. We must re-evaluate our long-term vision and use this opportunity with so many expiring contracts to make substantial changes across the club to rebuild with the spirit and mentality of the promotion squad. Committed winners fighting for the shirt, attacking football, and youth put front and centre, or at least given a genuine chance. A transfer policy based around young championship players and others desperate to make an impact, not overpaid marquee signings. Restore the positive values and together we will push forward. Anyone not aligned with these should not be involved. The committed supporter deserves better. The club is sitting on a huge potential, but apathy is limiting ambition. Brighton next Monday will expose those who care and those who don't. Start with you, Hesketh. Agree with the sentiment of the statement or disagree?
Agree with the statement. I think as well, one thing that needs to be pointed out, because I know some people aren't sort of into these big statements, is that if there are fans in the stadium, there would certainly be vocal derision, maybe is too strong, but you know, people would be venting their feelings vocally. And as we can't do that because we're having to watch on TV, which we've discussed before being, you know, rubbish and not fun at all, there's got to be a way to get your voice out. And I know that some people think the HF sort of take on a tone that it's them speaking for everyone. But the way the team's playing, I don't think there can be too many people who are disagreeing with it. You know, we'll get into, I'm sure, the game against Burnley, but it did look like there was a lack of passion. It did look apathetic, and there doesn't seem to be a huge turnaround in tactics coming anytime soon. So as far as the sentiment of the statement goes, I have to say I completely agree with it.
How are you feeling, Albert?
It's a bit wordy for a chant, isn't it? I can't see it catching on.
I mean, I want to get into chatting to you in a minute about what's worse this time under Hodgson or the end under Pardew. We'll get into that. We had a bit of that in WhatsApp this week.
That's going to be fun. But,
yeah, just about as fun as the football, I imagine. But yeah, how are you feeling about the sentiment of the whole statement? I get what Hesketh's saying. We've never been backwards in coming forwards in the stadium about making noise and showing our discontent. Go back to when I was a kid. I remember us throwing season tickets on the pitch, albeit it was the last home game in the season. But you get the point.
What a gesture!
It was when we lost to Wolves, and it was the we ended up sacking Alan Smith and appointing Kemba for the last two games of the season, which was Portsmouth and Stockport away. We've also been, you know, think to when it all kicked us up and we even went on the pitch and squared up with Damien Delaney in the 4-0 loss to Sunderland, if you think more recently. So, but that's, you know, God, could you imagine what one of our players would do now if a fan came on the pitch and squared up to him?
Would just fall over.
So what's your feelings on the statement?
I think it's, I don't think it's the most outlandish thing to say. I think it's fairly measured in its tone. No, I think the HF can, a bit like Marmite, some people are all for it, some people really don't like them. I sort of float somewhere around the middle. I think they do really positive stuff, and at times I think there's stuff that they don't come out looking so good. But on this occasion, I certainly agree with the sentiment and how they've kind of executed it. Obviously, it can't be done in a stadium. You know, they've not chosen to, you know, pitch up and loiter outside the training ground socially distanced. You know, it's I think it's kind of, it's just consolidated probably what I can only assume is the vast majority of how Palace fans are feeling at the moment. I mean, yes, we all go back to, oh, but we're probably not going down. You know, we have to be a real disaster for us to go down, which is true. And, you know, I mean, I look at that league table and I think, where on earth did we get those points from? I'm sure there's been like an admin error somewhere. But at the same time, you know, that is kind of the sort of definition of, you know, apathy and whatever you want to call it, you know, being a bit too complacent. And it is a waste of a decent squad and of a decent team. And whether it's a change in attitude or a change in management, you know, something does need to change. You know, it's not the worst situation a football club's ever been in. But it is very, very stagnant, and stagnant things aren't enjoyable. That's why they're stagnant. So yeah, fair play to him for doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. They point out in a statement that there's a really big opportunity this summer to, you know, change and build the club with all the players that are coming out of contract. So it'll be certainly interesting to see what goes on there. But it sort of moves into us talking about what was worse, Hodgson or Pardew, Albert. And it's kind of got to that where we're all extremely miserable and we all need something to change. And I think the nature of the last two defeats has been, well, it's been pathetic, really. Particularly that Burnley game, a lot of people talking about Burnley turning up and kind of looking like us, you know, when we first got promoted, a team that's all playing for each other and has an identity and all of that good stuff where, you know, you only had to look at Hodgson on the sideline. There was that clip where they went to him for about 15 seconds and he just looked completely lost, turning around, looking at his bench, not knowing what was going on. And so, yeah, we started talking about what was worse, Pardew or Hodgson, and we had different opinions, Albert.
Yeah, you really, really loved Pardew.
Well, I did. I mean, I get a lot of Palace fans did, especially for that.
No, of course. I've never been a fan of Alan Pardew pre-Palace, but you know, if a Palace manager's doing well, it means Palace are doing well. And it was the same with Allardyce. And like I say, if the manager's doing well, then Palace are doing well. And I've got, you know, you can't really complain. My problem with, my argument against Alan Pardew in this conversation, you know, it involves a big if. And, you know, ifs are all well and good. You know, for me, you know, if you take away the cup run, which was hugely enjoyable, I'm not going to lie. You know, it didn't end well, but it was an enjoyable ride. If you take away the cup run, I mean, from what, October before the new year where we went on the cup run, we were just utter dog shit in the league. And that certainly carried on the season after the cup defeat. You know, we were awful right up until he got sacked, apart from a, you know, the freaky 3-0 against Southampton where Alan Pardew thought it was fit to have a dig at the American owners. I still feel that league run under Pardew is worse than what we're going through now. I'm not saying it's by a country mile, but for me, it's bad. It's bad now, but it ain't as bad as it was under Alan Pardew towards the end.
Yeah, so I think the difference between the two, if you're looking just in the league, is that Hodgson always breaks up bad form, with the exception of post-lockdown last year, where it was seven straight defeats. That was obviously Hodgson's worst run as Palace manager, were probably excluding the opening of the first season when he came in and you know, had to pick up the pieces of De Boer. But he always breaks up bad runs with, he'll pick up like a draw and a win or two wins in the middle of like five or six defeats. And it's always split up. So it's never a sort of long, dreary period. You got those under Pardew, but he broke them up with cup results. And the cup, getting through in cups just always keeps that, you know, that getting to the final was just unbelievable that season. The season before, we had a decent run in the FA Cup as well. I think we got to the fifth round and were unlucky to lose there. The following season, we had another go in the cups as well, League Cup, at least we won a couple of games in that. It's not, there was always something to look forward to. I agree, once we got to post the FA Cup, I mean, he should have been sacked the moment he'd done that dance, to be honest. As soon as Rooney equalised, he should have been out the door then. He should have.
Manager who fucking won the cup got fired.
Oh, well. I mean,
I'm sure the letter got passed under the wrong door.
Yeah. That whole day, seeing Man United fans leave to not see the trophy presentation just so they could get off quickly is just like, I'd fucking still be there now, mate.
Have you tried driving from Wembley to Guildford? It is a bit of a bark.
But so yeah, absolutely. Like that period between the August and November, December of Pardew's final season in charge was rough. It really, really was. And that 5-4 at Swansea still remains one of probably my worst supporting Palace days, but at least it was 5-4. And I, and my,
at least it was 5-4. You know, it's grim. You know, it's grim.
At least it was 5-4 and not 3-0 is more what I'm getting at. But I don't know how I'd be if I was in stadiums right now, but I know how I am at home. Like sometimes being in the stadium, being at games and talking to people around it, it becomes a bit cathartic and you can understand situations a bit more and you wonder why people watching at home are so pissed off because you see certain things in the stadium, it feels a different way. But I've got to the stage now and I've never, Peter Taylor aside, I've never not wanted to watch Palace before, regardless of how bad things are. I've always wanted to go to the games and watch the games. And I find myself now turning on the TV when Palace are about to kick off and I'm kind of hesitating. I'm thinking, should I just watch Married at First Sight with a missus?
Or like me for the Burnley game, you're turning on fully aware that you've just gone 2-0 down. I mean, what was that? I was literally like turning the computer on to turn it on, knowing we were 2-0 down, thinking, why am I fucking doing this? Oh, sorry, it's still 80 minutes left. And no, it just got worse. Still watched it though.
At least you knew under Pardew, if we went 2-0 down early, we'd probably only lose 3-2. So
yeah. Yeah, but my heart rate, the peaks and the troughs within the 90 minutes, I'm sure was terrible for the cardiac scenario. Like, if we're getting like hammered, at least that's a solid state of misery. You don't have the ups and downs. That 5-4, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, the iconic thing of that whole 5-4 for me is friend of the pod, Ben Long, was standing next to me. And when we went 4-3 up, we finished celebrating and we both looked at the clock and looked at each other and went, there's still 8 minutes left. And we just both knew. We just knew. Like, that all they had to do was get a set piece. And Benteke could not defend set pieces back then. And we were a disaster in the penalty. It was just, yeah, we knew. We just knew it was going to happen. We knew we were going to probably lose the game.
The irony being that now he's probably one of the only people that can defend set pieces in our team.
Well, he's forgotten how to score goals, but he's a bloody good defender at the near post and corners now when he's on the pitch. But there you go, which is, you know, a lot to be said because now teams know just skip him out and we're a disaster anywhere in the middle of the penalty area from corners because that, I mean, that Burnley header was an absolute joke. Although saying that, the action that was on Guaita, which was only just sort of obstructing him slightly. I was watching the Burnley Fulham game before we started recording tonight, and for far less of the contact that was on Guaita, a free kick was awarded against Burnley tonight, which was infuriating to watch. But there you go. Heskey, if I suppose we should let you have your say, what's worse, now or then?
Oh, it's tough. Like, I hate being the guy in the middle, but I think at least, like you say, with Pardew, at least you know you'd see Palace score. Like, I just watch Palace now and I just don't think we're going to score, especially when Wilf's not playing. You know, and we went 1-0 down after, what was it, 5 minutes? I can't remember what it was. Early, anyway, against Burnley. Before you knew it, it was 2-0. I was like, well, that's it, isn't it? I know we're not going to score two goals, so.
And that's when I tuned in.
Then saying that, like, you know, at least I'm saying, oh, at least we knew we'd score under Pardew. I do remember going to Burnley away, funnily enough, where we came back from 2-0 down to go 2-2. And then Pardew, like, sent everybody up for a corner.
Oh, minute,
and then they broke and won. And it's quite galling to walk down past all the Burnley
fans.
Was
that Ashley Barnes?
Yeah.
It was. Of course it was.
And, of course it was.
To walk, you know, down the ground. I think I was with you, Terence, actually, going to the cricket ground or whatever, and having all these Burnley fans singing, "You came a long way for nothing." And the worst bit about that was they were right.
Well, that's, I remembered Palace fans, as soon as we equalised, singing 2-0 when you fucked it up. And there's a certain Palace fan, I would think it's most Palace fans, but obviously not considering that was being sung. They'd be like, oh, what are you doing? Like, you're tempting fate here. Just let it go. Let's let the game finish 2-2 and then we can sing that. And I remember Burnley fans outside singing 2-2 and you fucked it up as well, which was...
I mean, you know, I think the thing is, you talk about the cup run. The cup run was really good. almost perfect, obviously. But like now, we don't even have that. You know, like we're even going to get past the first game of the cup. You know, so we don't even really have that to look forward to. And I just, like, I'll always support Palace, obviously. I'll always watch the games, all the rest of it. But it's just, it's really dull. Like, it's not enjoyable. It's not entertaining. And I think that the longer this goes on, the more disenchanted all of the fan base will be. Because you saw after the Burnley game, Leeds and Burnley games, even people who had been less Roy out are now leaning a lot more that way, just because it's like you don't see anything changing in terms of like formation or personnel or, you know, the way we play football. So it's not good.
Yeah, and the final point for me on it is I confused the hell out of the missus when Eze scored against Wolves, because I wasn't celebrating. I was just effing and blinding at the TV, just being like, that's what we're fucking capable of. And you shackle us and don't let us do this. Look at how these players can pass and, you know, a bit of freedom when the pitch is opened up a bit. Look what we can do. And it's infuriating. It really, really is. So there you go. Right, let's finish that up there. And now we're going to, after this short break, go and listen and speak to Joe Walker from the International Clearance Podcast. Friend of the show, Joe Walker.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Funtime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Okay, we are now joined by Joe Walker from the International Clearance Podcast, and not just the International Clearance Podcast. I mean, friend of the pod, Joe Walker. You've been on this show a couple of times before.
Yeah, as I say, I'm not a complete stranger. I'd hope I'd have a bit more of a friendlier welcome than that. It was very professional, but yes. How are you doing, guys? Yeah. You all right?
Good. But you got big things going on now, so we need to, like, you know, give you the whole professional introduction and all that. So you started your International Clearance Podcast. For the listeners, give us a little flavour of what it is.
Yeah, it's a football podcast I started. Well, it launched in January, but something I had came to mind in the summer. Essentially, me and my friend Scully, who we've been co-hosts on the radio for a few years, we interview Brits who have played or coached overseas at some point in their careers, whether that's someone that did it 20 years ago, like our next guest will be. When is this coming out, actually? I might give you an exclusive.
This will be out Thursday, 18th of February, so okay. Tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well, the next guest will be Les Ferdinand, for example.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, nice. Talking about his time in Turkey in the 80s, and then but then we've also spoken to people, as we'll probably get to, like a Mandela Egbo, who's 23, out in the States right now. And yeah, I just feel like there's a lot of football podcasts in terms of that conversational style. And I think they tend to be my favorite, like the Under the Kosh, which I think is very good. And they tend to just speak to people that are less, you know, they're slightly less obvious people, but they are, I don't know what it is about footballers. They're so, all of them, because of maybe the dressing room culture, they've all got that after dinner speaker energy about them. They can all roll off stories so easily, and they've all got a lot of interesting insight and stories. And so I thought we'd just do like a version of that that was maybe a little bit untapped regarding kind of, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like footballers from this country never seem to travel as much as others from other nations, probably because we've got the big professional system that we do. But I still see it as a novelty, which is why I thought it would be interesting to hear about those that do it, why they do it, and whether they really encourage more people to do it. And yeah, it's been quite fun so far.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've really enjoyed listening to the episodes. There's also, you've had ex-Palace player Peter Ramage on there as well, and we've had him on the pod a few times. Always great value.
Yeah,
but absolutely, what you're talking about after dinner, talking like players there who, let's say, there'll be players on the podcast you've probably never even heard of as well, in terms of because they left England so early and been all around the shop. But they all talk so well. They all just seem so polished. And like, even Mandela Egbo is like so polite to even ask if he could swear.
Yeah,
so, that's absolutely. But yeah, I mean, so we obviously don't want to give too much away about the Mandela Egbo, but interview that you had, because you should definitely go off and listen to after this. For some accusations, it was an interesting pod.
Yeah, I didn't. So Ramage was the first ever episode we did, and as you guys would attest to, he was an absolute gent. But it never was deliberate to get so much Palace in on the first season. But it's just the way things go. Someone introduced me to Mandela Egbo, and I thought, oh, amazing. And the person who introed me, I don't think knew that I was a Palace or knew about the Palace connection. So it was meant to be just talking about his time in Germany and the US. But obviously remembering his departure from Palace being a surprise, certainly, and a little, I didn't realize there was such a cloud behind it. Maybe I just couldn't remember. But that ended up being quite a massive part of the episode. And yeah, caused quite a lot of reaction among Palace fans as well that have heard it. Some people at the club got in touch as well to go throw their two cents about the situation. But I'll keep that private, just you know, for the sake of, I don't know, don't get banned from the training ground like the agent was.
Yeah, so I mean, it's episode 4 of International Clearance, but go back, listen to the first episode, Peter Ramage and all the ones through. It's different perspectives from different types of players all over. You seem to have a penchant for goalkeepers, which being a goalkeeper myself, I'll take it. But yeah, so go and give it a listen. What's the socials, Joe? How can they find your podcast?
It's INTL Clearance on Twitter or Instagram. That's, yeah, international was too long. It's just INTL Clearance. That's the handle for the account. And we do a little teaser for which guests are coming up, although you won't need that this week coming up now. But yeah, and the new episodes drop every Wednesday on sort of Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and I don't know quite how many other platforms. I've been trying to get that checked. There's a few more. I think it's on Amazon, but yeah, I just say the ones I definitely know for sure, and then we're working on the rest.
Heskiff, pipe in.
Yeah, I just want to shout out the graphics that you put up every week ahead of the episode dropping, like the passport like image. It's great.
Yeah.
It's really good. Who does that?
So that's another Palace connection. That's my friend Oliver, who I've been going with to Palace since we were kids, sort of like 10, 12 years old. And he, for a time, was the main graphics designer at Palace in their office for a few years. So he's always, I don't know, when the time came to have a concept, I had an idea in my head of what I'd like to do with the way it looked. And I tried commissioning people who were good at graphics, but weren't really very good at, I didn't really have an awareness of football or the concept, and it just didn't work. And then he just decided to do it on a whim, and he just got all the references. He got the idea, and he's just made, yeah, these really cool things. So the day before each episode, yeah, we have like a passport page. There's the stamps page of a passport, and each club they've played with overseas has got a stamp. And it's just a nicer way of kind of drip feeding the episodes. And yeah, it made us look a lot more professional and clean and tidy at the start than we were. So yeah,
yeah, absolutely. No, it's clear. It looks clean. It's a good product, and it's, as I say, completely worth going and taking some time out to listen to. Nice little Palace connection in the background, and yeah. So International Clearance podcast, Joe. Thanks for joining, buddy. I'm sure we'll get you on the show at some point anyway, just to, you know, moan about Palace is pretty much what we do on here these days.
Oh yeah, I've got plenty of that in me at the moment. So yeah, whenever you're ready. Thanks for having me on.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Thanks again to Joe there for joining and talking about the podcast. Get on it. Listen to the Mandela Egbo episode. You will not be disappointed. Right before we get into the Brighton preview, it's time to tell you that support for Back of the Nest is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, Manscaped just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and at all times. Who knew smelling so good could feel so good? Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. Everyone knows Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your below-the-waist grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with a new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. With the same signature scent that's in all Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to the collection, hence me saying I smell like my balls last week. Light, approachable, and gentlemanly in all the right ways. Think of it as your wingman for the night to keep you fresh and ready for anything. Calming and inviting, this signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling into the anchoring notes of vetiver and a woodsy masculine finish. This 50 milliliter spray cologne is even hyperallergenic, cruelty-free, dye-free, paraben-free, and it's 100% vegan. This beautifully designed glass bottle makes a statement, and the manly scent is attractive to set the mood. Also, be sure to check out the Perfect Package 3.0 with all the essentials for your below-the-waist grooming needs, including the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer and crop formations. Yes, I'm talking about ball deodorant and toner to keep your testes besties. And now you can use a new Manscaped Refined Cologne to complete your set and smell great anytime and anywhere. It's time to feel sexy, people. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code BOTN at manscaped.com. Your balls and your body will thank you. Very briefly, Heskey, you said you used a Lawnmower 3.0 earlier and it's a close shave.
Yeah, it's a lot closer of a shave than I thought it was, let's say that. But what, it does the job. Wonderful stuff.
If you bleed whilst doing it, does it still make it vegan? Or does that mean an animal was harmed during?
The vegan is the cologne, mate. So
yeah,
if you shave your balls and you bleed, I wouldn't recommend putting the vegan aftershave on your balls.
It'd be like Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so it's Brighton, and we could not have picked a worse time to pick them up. Unbeaten in 6 games in the Premier League. Either of you want to hazard a guess at how many goals they've conceded in those 6 games?
Is it 2?
It's 1.
1.
1. Fuck. Goal. And we're notoriously high scorers, particularly without Wilf. So, it's an absolute given that the best we can hope for is a 0-0.
If only we had Pards.
If only we had Pards. Also, bad news here is that Brighton have managed at least 2 shots on goal in the opening 10 minutes of their last 2 games. And you know what's been happening to us in the opening 10 minutes of the last 2 games. You got
any other good stats?
I've got a good one in favour for us. I'll get to that in a second. Albert, can you think of any? Why are we starting games so slowly, or halves so slowly? Isn't it we've conceded 5 goals in the opening 5 minutes of the last 6 halves of football? What's this down to?
You said a lot of numbers there. You did say a lot of numbers there.
We've conceded 6 goals in the last, in the opening 5 minutes of the last 6 halves of football, or 5 goals.
So, Jesus. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Burnley, 2. Leeds, 1. Newcastle, 1. Why are we starting? Listen, I ain't got a fucking clue, to be honest.
Because my theory went bang out the window straight away against Burnley, because my theory was that maybe it's because Ray Lewington has been absent and he's not been geeing everyone up at halftime and before the games to get them coming out all fired up. But he comes back and he got worse. So.
Yeah, but even if that was true, it's a fucking damning indictment of the coaching of our squad that they need somebody to shout at them a bit in order to not concede a goal almost from kickoff. I mean, that's bad. I'm glad that your theory has been disproven.
well, we need to get Hugo Lloris in the changing room. Come in there, Nate, lads.
Come on, guys.
Fucking come on, Nate.
Fucking ill.
Yeah, you're way better than me.
Super Marche, shout out. That's a callback. Why is it? I don't know. I wish it's surely it's too many times to be coincidence. But that doesn't make it any less painful to witness. I mean, I say less painful to witness. As I mentioned, I actually tuned in at 2-0. So I kind of miss those. But it's just,
so it's not very good. We haven't conceded. So we only lost that game 1-0.
Yeah, in fact, it was the same with the Newcastle game. I missed the Newcastle goal in that game as well. So I'm kind of blissfully unaware, but deep down I know what's going on.
Right. So we love these stats. On whoscored.com, you'd be pleased to know we've now dropped from having two strengths as a team. We now only have one strength, which is stealing the ball from the opposition. But Hesketh, right underneath, it then lists our weaknesses, which is keeping possession of the ball. So we're good at stealing it and then giving it straight back.
I thought he was going to say Palace have one strength. Wilfred Zaha. And the weakness is we don't currently have Wilfred Zaha.
Yeah, we've now dropped to very weak on defending against long shots, defending set pieces, and defending counter-attacks. You'll be pleased to know that Brighton's strengths are attacking set pieces, creating long shot opportunities. And, you know, with the likes of Mope and up front and Trossard and March, they've got loads of pace for us on the counter just in case we want to try and hold the ball for a bit too long. So, I mean, we feel bad going into Brighton games at the best of the time, Hesketh, but it's not looking very bright, is it?
No, it isn't. I'm dreading it, to be honest. I'm really dreading it. And I think that's one of the things, thinking back to the HF statement, is this is the game where you do want to see the players right up for it. And as we've discussed on previous pods, and something that Wilf has said is that, you know, when we had Jedi and Damo and players like that, they understood the rivalry and how important it was. Whereas I think this group of players probably don't care as much about it or don't understand it as much. And then you look at Brighton and you think, well, Lewis Dunk's going to get him all G'd up, and they tend to play all right against us, Brighton. Even when they're not in great form. And now that they are in good form, I'm dreading it. Because I just, you know, like we said, we're probably going to let a goal in early. We don't start well, which is not good. We don't finish particularly well, which is not good. And we don't really do much in between, which is obviously also not very good. So it's just, you know, you look at the performances against Leeds and Burnley, and they're two different types of teams and they play two different types of football. But they both beat us, you know, fairly comfortably. I mean, we made Burnley look like fucking Bayern Munich. That third goal they scored when PVA tried to foul someone and ended up on his arse was the sort of cherry on the cake, really. And, you know, it's not like, we're losing to a certain type of team now. It's like we're just losing. We're playing badly and losing into all types of football team and all types of, like, whether it's possession play or long ball or whatever. And I know I'm the miserable one, but I know that, you know, most Palace fans are feeling this way now, and it's just a horrible time to play the team that you want to win more than anything. And they're also looking quite good at the time when you're looking really shit.
Well, I've got a good, I mean, I can't say I've researched this. I saw it on Twitter the other day. I do have a promising stat that you might like, Hesketh. And it's that Brighton's last three home league wins have all come in three separate years. So that's got to be a bit promising, isn't it?
Yeah, they've failed to win 15 of their last 16 home Premier League matches. And yeah, so their last three wins have literally come in because they won recently, 2021, 2020, they only had one home league win. And then the one before that was 2019. So no, you know, if we go there and win on Monday night, we've had as many wins at the Amex in the league as they have in the last two calendar years, which is obviously a crazy stat. But
I mean, we're really scraping the barrel with that stat, aren't we?
Well, I mean, they obviously have struggles at home for whatever reasons that is. And sometimes there's just no explanations for these things. Sometimes they just happen. If I think back to the 97-98 Premier League season when we were brilliant away from home, but just could not find a way to win at home. And to the extent that it was so ridiculous that we beat Wimbledon away at Selhurst Park, but couldn't win at Selhurst Park when we were the home team. So, yeah, that's sometimes these things happen. And Brighton still struggle to score goals. They're not scoring many goals, even in this six-game streak where they haven't lost in the league. All the games have been won by one goal or been draws. So it's possible. I mean, there's not. It's also, you got a derby. These things happen in derby. Form books go out the window, do they? Something like that. That's the cliche, isn't it? So
I have to fucking hope so this time.
Yeah, but as you continue with the stats, we've also, as a result of all that, Brighton will score from a long shot is very likely, and Brighton will score from a set piece situation is very likely, according to this. Yeah,
and it will both within the first 5 minutes.
Within the first,
highly likely,
indeed, and it all just comes down to. Can we find a way without Zaha, Albert? Is it going to be this time that we find the way?
Is that a rhetorical question? Because I almost feel like it doesn't. I feel like it doesn't need an answer because we probably won't. To be honest, I don't know. I mean, there's just no hope with no Zaha. I know it's depressing to say, but it's the stats don't lie. And to be honest, even with Zaha in the team, you know, we can blow hot and cold. And a lot of cold has been blown recently. So if we're going to do it, I mean, like, that, going back to the HF statement, Monday is, it's going to be very telling about several factors. You know, can we up our game with or without Zaha, to put a result out of the bag against, you know, our rivals in a derby game. And again, delving further into that, if there is no Zaha, what do we do? I mean, this is how bad it is. I mean, I'd take a 2-1 loss if it looks like we've actually fucking tried and we've scored and we've put in a decent performance. That's how sort of desperate it is at the moment, because it's just been so limp. We need to represent the shirt. We need to represent new ideas. Whether, again, if that's without Zaha, then so be it. But I don't want that to be the excuse, because it's just getting fucking boring listening to Sky and BT commentators drone on about how shit we are without Zaha. I know they're only doing their job, but we need to buck that trend.
Yeah. For me, I think Monday night could be telling for Roy Hodgson as well. I think if we go out of a whimper in that game and we lose that game, I genuinely think he could be in trouble.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You've got to remember, deep down, Steve Parrish is a fan at the end of the day, and he, as much as I'm sure everything's geared towards Hodgson leaving at the end of the season, he's still having to watch this as well, and he will know it's not right. And he's in touch with the fan base in terms of, he reads tweets and they read tweets. Saw him liking certain tweets which were slagging off the performances the other day before he unliked them, which was very interesting to see. And I've seen the screenshots that showed he liked this tweet, and then his like went away several minutes later, and it was completely derogatory against the football that Roy is putting out. So he sees these things without a doubt. And if we go out of a whimper, if we go there, we lose 2-0 and we don't even look like we're going to score, and the players look disinterested again and don't treat it like a derby, as we know, most of them don't even see it as one in their brains, or a rivalry, I should say, not a derby, obviously. It's going to be, I think it could be curtains for him, or some very difficult conversations are going to end up taking place in that week. You know, just like, let us get you, please allow us to get you to the end of the season so you can leave with some grace, instead of us having to sack you from what will all likely be your last job in football. Let's not do it. Let's get you to the end of the season. Try and play some attacking football. We're safe, effectively. Play some attacking football, open it up a bit, excite the fans a little bit, and then we can all pat each other on the back at the end of the season and say thank you very much for what would have been a fantastic tenure, because you know you can't overlook what he did in the first season for us. It was amazing. He dragged us out of a massive hole there.
Absolutely. And he's
consolidated us, but now it's time to move on. But please help us help you, Roy. Help us help you get to the end of the season. But I don't, I'm not sure that, I don't think Parrish would be too scared to pull the trigger at this stage, I think. But hopefully it won't come to that. Hopefully, as I say, Roy can just find a way to excite us all a little bit for the last handful of games. What, we got 13 games left? You know, just win five or six of those. And yeah, as I say, let's wave each other off. And you can use your keys to Croydon to get into my house if you want, and I'll make you a nice cup of tea, give you some chalky bourbons or something. Predictions, Hesketh, what are you thinking?
We're going to lose 2-0.
And Albert?
We're going to lose 2-1.
I'm going to forever be the optimistic voice, and I'm going to go for a 0-0 draw.
Whoa!
That's what it's come to, ladies
Tiny
and gents.
Tiny Rebel, their beers are too strong. For a 0-0.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this Key Lime Lager, and I'm not just saying that because they've sent it to me for free, and free beer definitely tastes better than beer you paid for, but there you go. So anyway, thank you guys for joining and talking through that with us. Massive shout out to Joe Walker for joining us and talking about his International Clearance podcast. Please go and check that out. It's excellent. Who's next? Who we got next?
Fulham. That stage?
Well, when Fulham took the lead tonight on the night of recording against Burnley, I was starting to get really worried, but they've drawn 1-1 with Burnley, so they're still, I think, 10 points behind us at this stage. So obviously it could get down to 7 at that point, because I think their next game's against Sheffield United and against us. So, yeah. So if, you know, we lose to Brighton, lose to them, they'll only be 4 points behind us. So we've
We can talk about how we're going to lose to Fulham on next week's show. Let's not do it now.
But yeah, so listen out for there won't be a match report this week. It will be us again covering it next week.
Monday. Really?
So we'll have to talk about Brighton and then again, and then talk about Fulham. So
what day is that going to be?
Well, it depends. I guess if we beat Brighton, it will be Tuesday night. If we lose to Brighton, it will likely be Wednesday night.
I'm very busy next week. I can see it. I'm very busy next week.
Well, look, everyone wants to see that Steel Man movie. So, yeah, looking forward to having you on, Albert, with no escaping. So look, until next week, everyone, up the Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.